This is All Things Considered from NPR News. I'm Robert Siegel.
And I'm Melissa Block. Sarah Chase is a familiar name to NPR listeners. She reported for us from Paris, the Balkans, and Afghanistan after the fall of the Taliban. She became so captivated by the potential of Afghanistan that she left reporting and started running a nonprofit group in the southern city of Kandahar. She still lives there. She now runs a cooperative agricultural venture that sells local soaps and oils. Sarah Chase has written a book about her years in Afghanistan, about corrupt warlords, about counterproductive U.S. policy, and about murder. She also describes her first view of Kandahar, December 11th, 2001.
Mountains, glowering masses of cragged rock tower over it from behind, coloring to a purplish blue as the sun tips toward evening. At this juncture, when we catch our first glimpse of it, Kandahar's reputation could not be worse. It's the other ground zero, the epicenter of the explosive forces the world is suddenly confronting, the place Osama bin Laden made his home as he ratcheted up his campaign against the United States and what he thought it stood for, notch after notch. It's foreboding, glowering, mysterious, defiant. In other words, irresistible.
At the time, reporters were told it was armed Afghan militias that battled the Taliban and forced them to surrender their stronghold of Kandahar. Now, Sarah Chase says that that story of Afghan resistance fighters muscling their way in from Pakistan, guns blazing, wasn't the real story at all.
Turns out there was no battle. There was no ground battle at all. They had had one skirmish the day they crossed the border, and after that, their American handlers, which we were all very aware were with them, their American handlers instructed them not to get into any more fights. And so, in fact, there was a whole kind of cinema of ground battle that never really existed.
I want to play a bit of tape. This is from your first report that you filed from Kandahar. The Taliban has fallen. Tribal factions are consolidating their hold on the city, and a security chief in Kandahar and his forces are raiding former al-Qaeda barracks to collect weapons.
The fighters swarm up the stairs and grab a dozen guns and rocket launchers and some blankets, and soon five men have donned the Arab desert fatigues that were piled in a corner. Anwar says he lost 55 men during the final assault on the Kandahar airport, where many Qaeda fighters were dug in. He says they detonated a huge explosion just as his forces attacked, killing 250 of their own fighters. A suicide defense, says Anwar. The bodies were only collected for burial today.
Sarah, did any of that actually happen, as you learned after
that? None of it happened. He didn't lose a man. Mahmoud Anwar didn't lose a man. And the bodies, the al-Qaeda bodies, were due to American bombing. It was fiction.
So the notion was boost this image of this incredible fighting force going in and taking this city by force.
Exactly. For American public relations, it was important that, you know, this not look like just an American operation, but rather a primarily Afghan operation that American forces were supporting.
You are very critical in the book about U.S. policy in Afghanistan on any number of levels, one of which is, though, the U.S. alliance with Pakistan and how that has backfired in Afghanistan.
It's really stunning to me. I really, right after September 11th, I remember President George W. Bush saying that we were opposed to terrorists and countries that harbor them. And it seems to me really self-evident that Pakistan is a country that harbors terrorists. And Pakistan has not only harbored terrorists, but it is fomenting the current growing insurgency in southern Afghanistan. That is not an indigenous resistance to the current regime in Afghanistan. It is basically like a low-grade invasion that's being manufactured across the border in Pakistan, not to say that it's not benefiting from disillusionment on the part of many, many Afghans with their own government, but it's fundamentally being instigated from across the border. And so it's really confusing to understand why the U.S. government has been supporting Pakistan, has been providing enormous amounts of money to the Pakistani government. As a matter of fact, it's so confusing to Afghans that I would say 95% or more of Kandaharis believe that the United States is in alliance with the Taliban. because it's so clear to Kandaharis that the Taliban are being sent across the border from Pakistan, and then Kandaharis are watching the American government provide grants and loans and support to the Pakistani government, that they just assume that this is indirect support for the Taliban movement. It's really mind-blowing.
The Bush administration, though, Sarah, would say Pervez Musharraf, the Pakistani government, have been a partner in our fight against terror. Look at their cooperation, say, even in the alleged plot in London to blow up airliners and the fact that a lot of the information seems to be coming from Pakistan, from sources there.
I think you need to very carefully distinguish among different components. I think there are two different agendas that have been pursued from Pakistan and Afghanistan. One has been a global agenda exemplified by Osama bin Laden and al-Qaeda, which is a kind of millenarian global war against what that group thinks is represented by Western civilization. A very different strand is the Taliban, which never had any global aspirations. And so if you look carefully at the type of assistance Pakistan has offered to the West in the so-called war on terror, it's always been the first of those two branches. It's always been against al-Qaeda and against the plot to blow up airplanes. But Pakistan has not been at all helpful in trying to reduce the level of violence inside Afghanistan. On the contrary, it actually is helping foment it.
You are still living in Kandahar. You now run a cooperative there making, I don't know if there's an irony intended here, but making local soap.
Yeah, a friend of mine actually laughed, saying, "You're still trying to clean up Afghanistan, you know, by making soap." It's actually an amazing project, and I kind of live this split-screen existence because the situation around us is just really deteriorating on a daily basis. And at the same time, our project is so exciting. What we're trying to do is basically expand the market for licit agricultural products by transforming them into something that's not perishable, like soaps. And we have a line of 7 gorgeous soaps that look like pieces of marble. Each one is colored with, again, local vegetable dyes. And of course, at the moment, we're too small to make a real impact on the regional economy. But the idea is if we expand, we alone, or what we're doing alone, can't solve the poppy problem. But what I envision is, you know, an economy that's like a mosaic with different chips, being able to create a picture that can provide Southern Afghans with a livelihood that doesn't depend on growing opium poppies. And I think we are, and what we're trying to do could be a piece of that picture.
And bad as things are in Southern Afghanistan, in Kandahar, you think you'll stay?
Yeah. If the situation doesn't get worse, I intend to stay at least for another 2 or 3 years until Arghan, this skincare product cooperative, is able to sustain itself without me. If the situation becomes so violent and dangerous that we are no longer able to do our work, then I won't be able to stay. But if I can stay, I want this business to survive.
Sarah Chase, thanks for talking with us.
Thank you, Melissa.
Sarah Chase's book is The Punishment of Virtue, Inside Afghanistan After the Taliban. You can read an excerpt at our website, npr.org.